Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. He's back from Lithuania. How you doing, Pete? What's going on?
Oh, good. You are the host of Abroad in Japan. I am the sidekick of Abroad in Japan, and I occasionally fulfil that role with aplomb, but most weeks I don't, so I'd like to apologise to everyone. No, good, man. Yeah, Lithuania was sparkling. Very much enjoyed that, the city of Vilnius. I was there for a very short period of time, under 2 days, but it was worth the horrific, end-of-day situation that met myself and my friend Craig on the way out from Luton Airport and on the way back as well. Astonishing scenes at Luton Airport. I mean, it wasn't even COVID-related. They weren't even checking the documents, I don't think. They were just doing the passport thing. And you know how many planes are coming in? You know how many planes are going out? Just put enough staff on for that.
What's it? What? Nothing happened then?
It was just a load of bloody... just a lot of queuing, and then the people who were in the queues, there were flights leaving. They had to be filled with people, so they were shouting, "Right, who's next for Faro? Who's next for Warsaw? Who's next for Krakow?" And so people would be running out of the lines to join a longer line than they were in the first place. They would have been through if they'd stayed in the original line. These were the people from Luton Airport, and I just felt so sorry for the people who were actually at the baggage handling and the desks that had to deal with a lot of stuff. And then you get Vilnius in Lithuania, and it's this beautiful listed building. It's this beautiful kind of, it looks like a town hall, the old bit of Vilnius Airport anyway. And I left my Nintendo Switch on the flight by accident. And I just went to the desk and went, any chance of, me filling them in a form for lost property? They went, oh, it's all here, we got it. And then they just handed it to me.
She pulled it out of their pocket.
Honestly, I've never been more into a city as Vilnius, because it was just so good, so cheap, so vibey. Everyone was lovely. Everyone was sweet. Everyone's English was excellent, because I started learning Lithuanian for one weekend. But it was, it was wonderful. You always learn one word, asti prosho, which is sorry, I think.
Time for the Pete Donaldson's brand new podcast, Abroad in Lithuania.
Talking about Lithuanian
politics every Tuesday. Give us the podcast. I know
Chris,
what you mean, though. Like, British airports, going back to British airports just quickly, it's just something about people are so rubbish at getting on planes in the UK. You know, when we get on a plane in the UK, we're like, oh, I'll just slowly get to my seat. I'll block the aisle. No one can move.
Yeah.
I'll put my bag up.
I'll open up the overhead baggage and sort of just like amble around. Oh, no, I've forgotten my earphones. I've forgotten my eye mask. But look,
My Nintendo Switch, where has it gone?
That was my Nintendo
You're part
Switch.
Of the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I'm clearly part of the problem. But I mean, I just felt so sorry at the desk. And then we got back and we were in a queue for about an hour. And there was a guy three or four people in front of us, and he was tapping away on his phone. And I went, I bet he's tweeting about the big queue that we're in. And he did. He was tweeting. This guy, I think he's a sound designer. Weirdly, we had one or two friends in common on Twitter. And he was tweeting about how poor the lines were in the queue at Luton. So I was like following what he was tweeting. And he was taking pictures of the queue that we were all in. And I felt like he going, hey, stop taking pictures of this queue and put them on the internet. Fun boy.
But like, I mean, it's like you come to Japan, right? People get on planes extremely fast here. They do something revolutionary. When they get on a plane, right, with your luggage, rather than stand in the aisle and put the bags above your seat, you get into the sort of seating area and then you put it above.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? You get in front of your seat, off the aisle. But people in the UK just don't do that. And that shot, and that's why planes never ever leave on time. And I hate flying domestically or around Europe in general on little planes. Japan nails that. People are good.
Yeah, getting very polite.
But while you've been in Lithuania, I've had a good week. I met Ken Watanabe. Finally, 9 years. It's done.
Chris.
Why win? I finally met the person I've been joking about meeting for almost a decade now. A goal that became a dream that became reality. It's done.
Yeah.
And I can't
believe
it.
You met him. How did this incredible meeting of the minds, the two performers, come about? I bet it was like inside the actor's studio
with, not as well.
With Sir Anthony Hopkins.
But with a crap interviewer. I mean, I was really bad, actually. I didn't sleep the night before because I was really nervous about doing this.
Oh, wow.
And I interviewed him and met him on like 1 hour's sleep. I don't know how I got through the day. I think I had to drink like 4 or 5 coffees to get through it. But yeah, it was good. It was just a bit surreal because I remember he just walked into his coffee shop where we did the interview, and it's just like everyone jumps on him, starts asking for autographs. Basically, I did a documentary a few years ago on the tsunami, and there's a town in North Miyagi, about an hour north of Sendai, and he owns a coffee shop there. And Ken has sort of adopted this town. Back when the tsunami happened in 2011, he got stuck into this town called Kesenuma and helped out. And he loved the people there so much that he set up a coffee shop. And we went there in 2018 for like a tsunami documentary. And I think we were trying to meet Ken on the day and trying to time it, but we messed up. Ryotaro had a man who was supposed to organize it. He forgot, and we didn't get to meet Ken. Interestingly, though, I met Ken, and when I met Ken, I was like, oh, have you seen the documentary? He's like, no, I haven't. And so somebody along the way lied to me.
He's a very busy man. He's a very busy man.
Oh, yeah, Ken's watched it. He liked it. He hasn't seen it. And he was like, oh, I don't remember giving permission to film there. But it's a bit awkward. But yeah, no, it was good. It was good. And it's just a bit weird and surreal. But sort of focusing on his life off screen, sort of being part of this town and just being stuck in with the locals. He's friends with everyone there. He knows everyone. I was going to say he's a bit of a celebrity around town, but he's just a celebrity.
He's
anyway.
A bit of a celebrity
Ken
everywhere,
Watanabe.
I suppose.
Exactly.
how do the people of his town kind of, because they're used to seeing Ken Watanabe, one of the most famous Japanese men ever. Do they ever sort of, have they kind of gotten used to his celebrity and the way that he attracts a bit of a carnival, a bit of a sideshow wherever he goes? Yeah. Have they kind of accepted that, or do they sort of go, oh my God, it's Ken Watanabe?
No, I mean, some of the locals are kind of shocked and surprised because he's not there all year round. You know, he sort of turns up several times a year. I think with COVID, it's been a bit more difficult. But like he knows a lot, all the locals really well. They're his good friends. So it doesn't feel like that. Like he just talks to everyone like they're, you know, just his friends really. So it's kind of a really natural sort of situation. But so I'm sort of chronicling his time there, and I'm meeting up with him again the next sort of week or two, and then beyond that one more time. So I think there's going to be 2 or 3 filming sessions together and sort of get this documentary, which I'll probably call I Spent a Week with Japan's Biggest Rockstar, movie star. Yeah. No, a week with Ken. But no, it was cool. It was a surreal thing. I kind of wanted to get Natsuki in it again, like I did with Hyde, but I feel this is a bit more serious than that.
Oh, and grow up, Chris. Oh,
I don't
come
wanna
on. Let Natsuki see the Watanabe. Could you be any more Watanabe? No, could you Watanabe any more, Ken?
Oh, dear.
Call it that.
That would have been quite good if you got it right the first way.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Apologies. Well, I just edit it out, can't I? So
edit that out.
To get it right the
first
time.
You can't edit that out now. No. But
can you what in our beam or Ken? Can you what in our beam or of a movie star? You've got to say that. Next recording session, next filming session, the first thing you say is, can you what in our beam or of a movie star? And then he'll just look at you and go, this is over. This unholy union has ended. You can't work with me anymore.
Well, guys, we're holding auditions for the new Pete Donaldson. Send your emails in to bronzebandpodcast@gmail.com if you want to be a part of the podcast.
It's your email, mate. It's your email box. You're the one that has to go through them all to find the 8 proper emails next week. Don't worry about it.
Oh, God. But no, we'll see. Maybe we'll introduce Natsuki to Ken. I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I've got to break more bread with Ken. Break more rice. Let's get into story of the week, though. But yeah, no, crazy situation. Yeah. Still can't believe it. It's going to be good. It's going to be crazy.
And fun.
I was worried people wouldn't believe me when I posted the photo with him. Just him and I having a coffee, right? I thought, people are just going to think I photoshopped this. Like, there's like a conspiracy group of people who don't think we saw Mount Fuji in Journey Across Japan last year. They thought I photoshopped it or rotoscoped it in because...
In the video?
In the videos, because
is After Effects tracking good enough?
It is. Yeah, you could do it. You could do it.
Yeah, you could do it.
Oh, front of a
sounds
green
like you're
screen,
admitting it. Sounds like you're giving them a crumb for them to devour on the Reddit.
Well, that's why I posted two photos. One of them, us having coffee, and the other one, him and I just sitting on some grass. It just looks like a date or something.
Just hanging out.
Should be good. And you can look forward to watching that probably in January, guys. Should be out around then. Let's dive in to Story of the Week. And it's from Carwin and Rose. Hi, Chris. Hi, Cool Chris and Coolish Pete.
Cool Chris.
Back in November 2019, while staying in Kyoto, we decided to take a trip to Nara, the ancient capital. As we rode the train back, I saw one of the stops along the way was Inari Station, which, as you know, is directly outside the entrance to the Fushimi Inari Taisha, the sort of string of gates, the red gates going up the mountains of Kyoto. It wasn't on our itinerary for the trip, so we hadn't researched it properly beforehand and didn't know what to expect besides there being a long row of torii gates like you see on the cover of every travel brochure. So we jumped off the train in blissful ignorance, said goodbye to civilization, and started our blind venture up the secluded mountain at what was now around 11 p.m. at night. The sight was amazing, but amidst our bewilderment was an ever-growing feeling that something was off, like we weren't alone. We had been exploring for nearly an hour at this point, desperately looking for something to signify the end of the trail. We weighed the odds, then admitted defeat and decided to go back the way we came, since we at least knew it could get us home and get back to our hotel. And that's when we heard a twig snap behind us, then another and another. We stopped dead in our tracks, frozen with fear. Suddenly a blood-curdling squeal came up from the trees, followed by grunts and groans. God, deep groans, gravely unhuman. Then it started getting louder and louder. And then we saw it. Two shadows crawled out onto the path behind us, just a few meters away, blocking our way home. Their squeals getting more aggressive, like they were fighting over who get the first dibs at the delicious human dessert that stood a few meters away. The shadowy creatures on their path were then joined by three or four more. They shrieked and squealed as they crawled under the torii gates into the light of the lamps. It was at this moment we realized that the creatures blocking our way were a gang of chunky little boars. Oh, no, not boars. We made it back alive, except to put the perfect cherry on top of our exhausting late-night adventure. When we finally got back to the train station, it was shut. I could only laugh. Are boars dangerous in Japan? Were we in any danger? Is it common for boars to attack people, like my girlfriend says? Or could we have just walked through them and watched them scamper away? Keep up the amazing work, guys, from Carwin and Rosie from London. I was half expecting it to be... We heard grunts and groans, turned the corner, it was Pete Donaldson. Because I remember you went up at night to around the shrines, around the same, only a year, it was a year earlier though, wasn't it? 2018.
It was, yeah. Well, the thing is that I think I read at the time that boars grazed near the old Inari shrine. So
Pretty dangerous.
Not like, They can give you a nasty bite, I would say, the old boars.
Well, they've got a tusk, they can pierce you with it.
They would tusk up your bum.
You know. killed King Robert in Game of Thrones, didn't it? Triggered the whole War of the Kingdoms. I mean, they are quite dangerous. You've got to be quite careful of them. And we've had stories like this before, haven't we? Of folks being a bit bold and daring, going up there at night and they're running across a wild boar. Never like a fleet of wild boars like this, though. I mean, no. I don't know what I would do. What would you do? How'd you get out of this, Rosie?
I'd sing the song Wild Boar at them. Wild Boar, Wild Boar! Never look. No, I would...
then you get stabbed to death.
I'd push over the gates onto the boars and run away.
Oh, God.
Desecrate a national monument.
Dump them out.
Yeah, it'd be like a lovely domino system. Why haven't they... Bearing in mind that because of the designs of the little pencils in the ground, the little gates, the gate after gate after gate, you can't see outside of the passageway they have been created. So why doesn't some enterprising individual to attract people to whatever unlovable town they found themselves in charge of, why don't they just build another set of those Tory gates? Because those gates are such a tourist trap, and you can't get a decent picture these days because there's so many people on them, pre-COVID. So why doesn't some enterprising town just make a load of these Tory gates somewhere else? And it's the same photograph as you get in Inari. Just make it again, make more of them again, and people can get their shots and pretend they were in Inari, at the Fushimi Inari Taisha, whatever they call it.
Copyright, isn't it? Copyright.
Pick. Copyright.
A few places have done it. Like there's have a place they? In Yamaguchi that I did a video with Ryotaro. We had some fugu, like blowfish, like Homer Simpson. And we went to somewhere, it was kind of similar, but not as impressive. There must have been like 50 shrines going down into the sea.
Right, okay.
But yeah, you're right. Why don't you get one? You should do one back home in the UK, in Essex.
Yeah, it would look exactly the same. It would look exactly the same.
Yeah. But I mean, boars are, I don't think I've ever seen a boar in Japan, thankfully. I wouldn't want to. But what I've seen the aftermath of the boars. When I did the Fukushima documentary, we walked through a town that was completely like left behind, abandoned, right? About 5 miles from the nuclear reactor. And a lot of the shops were smashed to pieces. The shop fronts were smashed and there was like damage. And I was like, is it burglars? And my guide was like, no, wild boars. Wild boars. And apparently the boars, and they're not just any boars, they're radioactive boars because they've consumed food and drink from the Fukushima nuclear exclusion zone. So they are irradiated animals that I think they've tried to put down because of that, right?
Yeah.
So radioactive
it's
wild boars.
How would you, I mean, these days it would probably be easy because you could have like a sort of, how would you put down all of the boars in the area? It sounds like a Far Cry side mission. if you sort of, you'd need like a heat camera maybe. That would probably help, wouldn't it? I'm literally just trying to think how I would go about a boar genocide. I don't mean to. I don't know why the podcast today has turned into this. We've gone from Ken Watanabe to shooting boars in the face with a shotgun. That's where we've got to. So apologies.
Wild boar genocide with Pete Donaldson. Another podcast for the pile. It's another one. I mean, I think they should let the boars be, to be honest. Let them go.
Let the boars be.
Live.
Let the boars down.
I guess it's dangerous because then they'll breed and give birth to radioactive superhero wild boars, like Ninja Turtles, but Ninja boars.
It's the way the world's going, isn't it? It's the way the world is going. Wasn't like Bebop or Rocksteady a wild hog? I think Bebop or Rocksteady was one of them. Bebop had like a kind of, he had like sort of tiny glasses and like a mohawk. And I think Rocksteady might have been the boar. Either way, two terrible guys.
What is that? Rocksteady
from Bebop. The Ninja Turtles. They were from Bebop and Rocksteady. They were from I don't know why they're called Bebop Rocksteady, but they were kind of like very 80s kind of like cool cats, cool balls.
Well, at least we've birthed a brand new brand of superhero, Wild Boar Boys. I don't know. But I mean, hopefully they'll let them go. They'll let them live, just like they did with the cows, the radioactive cows, right? That guy keeping 200 cows alive in the fields of Fukushima. Good man, good man. Well, we've not come here to talk about radioactive animals all day long. This week, there's an interesting study that's been done for the top 30 foods that go best with a bowl of white rice.
And Study's a bit strong, Chris. Come on, mate. Study.
They asked, how many people did they ask?
I don't know, but it's not a study. 1,393 people.
That's quite a lot of people.
That's a lot of people, but I wouldn't call it a study necessarily.
Study.
It's a pop quiz, isn't it? It's a thing you do on Family Fortunes.
we've had worse things that have gone under the guise of being a study in the past, though. We've had what do Japanese women think of guys? And they interview like four people at Harajuku, and they represent all of Japanese women ever in the history of Japan.
That's what you, yeah, and then you try the chat blinds or try out on your mate for a YouTube content, like Shaki. She has to answer a lot of weird questions from you, and then you just blame on the internet.
I am the facilitator of just shit, really. That's my new title.
Hey, it's got your studio. Don't worry about it.
Oh no. Right, so 30 is a lot of foods to go through. And to be honest, on the last sort of 10, I don't know what half these foods are. But we're going to go through the 10. Right. We're going to go through the 20 foods that 1,400 people representing all of Japan have said go well with rice, and I want you, Pete, to tell me and our listeners if you think yay or nay to these things, if they go well with
going
rice.
We're going through 20, right, okay.
Don't worry, it won't take long. All right, first one, number 20, and this is in order of if it goes well
preference.
Or not. So at the lowest end, number 20, raw egg goes well
raw
with
egg,
a bowl
yes.
of white rice.
I love a hot bowl of white rice and just a raw... It's usually just the yolk, isn't it? The yolky, lovely yolk. You mix it in. Oh, beautiful. Big fan of that.
It's one of those things, isn't it? The first time you do it, you're like, no.
This is wrong.
Good idea. This is wrong.
Yeah.
But you get if you go to like a Japanese traditional inn for breakfast, it's my favourite thing. You get like an egg and you put a little bit of soy sauce in it. You sort of stir it up a little bit, break the egg up, break the egg yolk, and then pour it on a bowl of rice. And it just has it gives the rice a nice sort of savoury, umami flavour, doesn't it? It's quite good. So I agree.
Beautiful.
That's a good one. In number 19, we have miso mackerel, literally mackerel that has been soaked in miso sauce.
Not really had it, to be honest. I couldn't possibly speculate. I may have had it in a ryokan back in the day, but I don't really know, to be honest. So 19, not a clue.
It's all right. I'm not really that big on miso mackerel. That gets a thumbs down from me. Next up, number 18, we have umeboshi, pickled plum.
No, thank you. Get that out of my house. Get out of my house and take your plums with you.
I mean, that's another popular one, particularly sort of breakfast, right? Traditional breakfast in Japan. I love sour things, but something about sour plums, it just seems wrong. I think it's because it just feels like the plum's gone off. It just feels like a plum's expired, and I've never really got around that. Right. But weirdly, I like umeshu, like sour plum wine. Yeah. Weird how the mind works. Especially me. Number 17, we've got Szechuan twice-cooked pork. What about that? Kind of spicy Szechuan pork.
Again, never had that. I fear we may have to be skipping through these pretty quickly by the time we get to the top 10. But no, never had the Szechuan twice-cooked pork. What's that like?
Spicy, but not too spicy.
It's spicy.
It's basically just pork that's sort of marinated in like soy sauce and spicy sauce. It's all right.
I see.
Number 16, we've got kimchi and pork stir-fry. Ooh.
That's a classic stir-fry. I'm a big fan of that.
I guess a thumbs up from me. Number 15, chicken namban, which is fried chicken and a sort of sweet and sour tartar sauce. And I love it so much. And I had it yesterday and I had the greatest indigestion ever because I ate so fast.
Because
it was so good. Are you a fan of chicken namban?
It sounds lovely. Never had a chicken namban, but I would very much like to try it. I'd probably have to cook it over here, but I can't imagine there's many places that does namban, but...
It's basically just some sort of karaage chicken with tartar sauce. It's probably one of the easier things to do at home, actually.
Yeah.
But beautiful stuff. Number 14, miso soup. I mean,
classic. That's
a classic.
That's breakfast for me in a ryokan.
That's got to go up there. Number 13, croquet. Potato croquet. Or is it croquet?
Potato croquet. That's
how do
a very
you
bumpy
it?
Game of croquet, I would say. Yeah, no, croquet. Too many carbs here, and to be honest, like number 12, fried eggs. I mean, I'm not having that even. That's just too greasy, too carby.
So raw eggs good, fried eggs
too
bad.
Ricey. Exactly, correct. Fried eggs on a load of unless it's in with a load of like pork. I just fried egg just unwelcome. Give me just the raw egg and make sure it's not got salmonella in it, and we'll be fine. We'll be friends.
It's a little bit tricky eating a fried egg on rice as well I find, because you sort
Slides
of break
off.
Up awkwardly with a bloody chopstick, isn't it? Difficult. You've got to stab it. Number 11, salt grilled Pacific soury fish. I don't think you know what that is. I don't even remember having it myself, but I probably have. Number 10 is salted salmon. Now that is probably number one on the list of things you'll get when you go to a traditional Japanese inn. You're a fan of salted salmon? It's pretty good.
Never had it salted salmon. It's just what? Is it just uncooked salmon with covered in bloody salt?
It's usually cooked and sort of pan fried it a little bit, but it can be a bit hard. But it's good. Lots of bones in it though, so be careful when you do eat it, lest you have an unpleasant experience. Number 9, we're in the top 10 now. Hamburg steak, a big kind of meatloafy style dish. Are you a fan of that?
I don't mind that. I like it when you go. I like it when you go to a mid-range, well, not even mid-range, a very low-range, big kind of like conveyor belt sushi place. You'll occasionally see a little dish going past where it's like a little babby sushi, little babby lumber sushi with a tiny little hamburger on top, and it's very adorable, but unspeakably tasteless.
They are really bad. They're so. It's like flavourless rubber. Number 8, one of my favourites, tonkatsu, fried pork cutlet.
Yeah, high fives for that. Lovely.
That's a 10 out of 10. Number 7, yakiniku, literally grilled sort of meat, which I had the other day. And I always feel guilty when I have yakiniku because it's just so damn fatty, but it goes pretty. You need the sort of rice to cancel out the fattiness of it.
And a nice
that
beer.
That makes sense.
A nice
and a beer. In number 6, we have natto, which I can't do. I don't know if you can do it. Can you?
I think it might sort of balance out. Maybe a bit of soy on some rice might balance out the kind of the aggressive flavors of the natto. So I've never tried them together, but wouldn't be a bad breakfast, I think, because natto, it's very. Well, I guess it's got a lot of protein. It gives you a lot of energy, like eating nuts for breakfast or beans for breakfast. But it is just a situation where you'd need the rice provides a bit of ballast, bit of weight to it.
Ballast. And get a peg for your nose to put over your nose if you do eat it. That's so bad. Number 5, we have spicy cod roe, also known as mentaiko, something I simply can't eat. It's kind of like red, orange slabs of fish eggs and...
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible. They're very, like a weird, spicy, salty flavour that it's like having your tongue electrocuted. So, like, you know, when you lick a battery, which, you know, I do every day, it's a bit like that. Imagine licking a battery, but not as fun. Number 4, we have Mapo Tofu, which is kind of like, you must have had this. It's kind of like a Chinese dish, and you have the rice, and it's sort of mixed in with ground meat. Red peppers, Sichuan peppers, Chinese chili paste, black beans, tofu. It's pretty good, but quite a heavy thing. It's quite a heavy thing. And after you have
this... Not for breakfast.
It's not a breakfast dish, no. You'll fall asleep after having this. Number 3, we have gyoza, which I think is quite a good one. Because gyoza do have strong flavours. You know, the garlic, the onions, chives. The rice can sort of balance it out, right?
Interesting. If the rice is... Well, it's just because it's kind of like, it's almost like pasta and rice, isn't it? Again, doubling up on the pasta a little bit. On the dumplings.
It is a bit of a carb overload. Number 2, chicken karaage. That's
yes,
a good
please.
One. That's a solid
yes,
one.
Yes, please.
And in number 1, first place, can you guess what it is? And I don't think you're looking at the list, so you can't cheat, right?
What would it be? Is it not like that car? It's probably some kind of like deep, rich pork. Or beef dish, maybe. Something beefy.
Something beefy. Well, close on the pork front, on the meat front. It is shoga yaki, stir-fried pork fried with ginger sauce. And it's good. It is very good because it's quite a flavourful dish. You need the sort of rice to balance it out a little bit so it doesn't overwhelm your mouth. But that's a pretty good list there. I think if I had to choose one thing on the list, I would go with, you know what, I'd probably go with raw egg. I do love a good raw egg with soy sauce.
I do like a raw egg. Delicious. Yeah. Make me very hungry, Chris. I've not eaten yet.
You haven't eaten yet?
Not eaten yet.
You haven't eaten at all? Oh, no.
No. What you, 10 to 11.
What are you
starving.
Lunch? What are you going to have? Raw eggs?
I'd just get back on
eat
the train.
Raw egg.
Probably eat a Snickers or something.
A Snickers chocolate bar. Shocking, Pete. To be honest, I had a McDonald's for lunch, so I can hardly talk. We'll be back in a moment with the fax machine and your questions.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fact machine. What have we got this week from our listeners? Mr. Donaldson.
Oh, truncated fact machine includes Lena. Hello, Lena. Dear Chris and Pete, I was wondering if you, Chris, would consider writing a culinary travel guide to Japan. What do you reckon the last 10 minutes was, Lena? It's just going, what goes with rice? All the best from beautiful Freiburg in Breisgau, southern Germany. Oh, interesting. I didn't know Freiburg was even in southern Germany. I just know, I generally know Germany from the football teams, but I don't really know where everything is.
Your knowledge of geography is all through football, isn't it?
Yep.
I love it.
Pretty much.
A culinary travel guide. I mean, I'd like to do I've been to all 47 prefectures as of like last month. So yeah. I'd like to do something, but I just feel like books are a thing of the past when it comes to travel, right? I feel like videos are better, aren't they? Don't you think? Travel books, they just feel a bit outdated. Like whenever if I pick up a travel book about Japan, it will list like 10 of the most obvious things, like go to the King Kakuji Temple, go to Sensoji in Akasaka. Yeah. Like it's all stuff that every guidebook has. And then sometimes they'll list a restaurant, but there won't be any reviews. You know, I feel like the world sort of moved on from guidebooks a little bit.
The problem with Japan is that they open and close restaurants at a rate of bloody knots. So you could be... I've done this so many times. I've written like a list of things I like to do and things I like to see.
Right,
And you have to go for the Himeji Castle and the Inari shrines and stuff, because you're kind of in a situation where a lot of the shops will... A lot of shops and restaurants will just arrive, do a couple of years and then disappear, and you'll never be seen off again. So your guide would be out of date very, very quickly, I think, if you did anything commercial, let's say.
My dreams of a culinary guidebook destroyed before my eyes. I don't know. I think I'd just rather just do videos, to be honest, Lena, and eat my way through Japan with wagyu and sushi and whatnot. I think that's the way forward. And I think you can sort of capture the atmosphere of somewhere a lot better in a video than you can with a book. But I do want to write a book one day. I'll call it Abroad in Japan. That's it. There's not. That's
it. That's all you got. That's all you got. The publisher would be like, "Oh, we need something that really sort of sums up what you do, Chris, and not just a recooking of the title of your YouTube channel." And you say, "Yes, let's call it Abroad in Japan." No further questions. I'm leaving.
What would you call it? A fraud in Japan. What would you call it?
A lonely man trying to fill his heart and his soul with karaage. the Karaage Diaries.
Cumbersome title to a book ever written. I don't know. I'll call it something clever and brilliant. I'll think about it nearer the time. But I think I'd rather just write about like living in Japan for 10 years and all the weird stuff I've done. Because I've got a lot of stories that I haven't talked about, haven't spoken about. And by that point, I'll be able to talk about my time as a teacher and my time living there a bit more openly. Because everyone there will have forgotten me, and I'll just change their names and be able to tell you private stories and things that I probably shouldn't reveal. We got one here from Elijah. Elijah, it says, "Dear Chris and Pete," but he repeats, "Hi, Chris and Pete." It's "Dear Chris and Pete." "Hi, Chris and Pete." "My question is regarding motorsport in Japan. Have you ever considered taking part in Japanese motorsport, or rather, have you ever had the interest to visit the Suzuka Grand Prix?" It must be Suzuka Grand Prix, where most Japanese racing leagues are held. "I, for one, think that it would make for an exciting YouTube video. Much love from Singapore. Sincerely, Elijah." What do you reckon, Pete? Are you big on motorsport?
I saw you doing the drift challenge with the with the Trash Taste Boys, and you've wussed out of that one. So I don't think you've got the high octane heart of a true Japanese driver.
Bollocks! Somebody had to do the drone. They did offer. They did sort of say, "Do you want to do it?" And I was like, "No,
no, thank you."
I think four, three's already too many. Four's just a bit silly to have on the camera. But I did do the drone. That was really fun. Like Connor and Joey and Gant, they'd sort of drive towards the drone. I'd have to like race out of the way just in time. It was good, but like, not really my thing, to be honest. It's one of those sort of topics that I'm not that big on, and so my lack of enthusiasm would probably show in the video. So, unfortunately, probably not, Elijah, unless Pete Donaldson comes over and convinces me to do it.
Suddenly becomes a big motorsport fan.
Absolutely. I got one here from...
Oh, we've got
Yamamoto.
Yamamoto Yoshida. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, sorry.
Over to you, Pete.
My name is Yamamoto Yoshida. I am a junior high school student in Shizuoka. I have only one question, which is it only me, or is Japan getting really cold? I think Yamamoto Yoshida might very well be the most British Japanese junior high school student in Shizuoka, because that's all we talk about on the podcast, because we're British. What's your opinion or any experience regarding this? In my experience, on Monday, I do my daily routine. I get ready to go to school. Then when I open my front door, it was fucking it's fucking freezing. It's fucking freezing. And they said effing freezing in the email. I decided to change my seifuku to winter uniform. Best of luck, Chris and Pete. Now, I know the word fuku is clothing. What is seifuku? Is it kind of like warm, my uniform or something? I presume it's something like uniform anyway.
Yeah, it means uniform. Fuku means clothes. Se means system or law or rule.
Ice. So cool.
Law clothes. Clothes of the law.
Law clothes.
But yeah, uniform.
smashing.
This doesn't sound like a Japanese junior high school student from Shizuoka. My name is Yamamoto Yoshida. But then he writes like just a guy from like Bournemouth. Like, it's very, very suspicious.
Hint it called. Really?
But he's very suspicious. Very good. His English is very good for a junior high school student in Japan. It's pretty impressive. Japan is getting cold. It's becoming winter. Did you see in the news the other day that the former Japanese Prime Minister, I can't remember his name, Taro Aso? Maybe. He said that because of global warming, Hokkaido's rice has got more delicious. Did you see that?
Cool. He sounds like one of those mad Republicans who turns up to the Senate with a snowball. Is that kind of like, is that him sort of saying that it's a good thing and the rice has okay, good. Good on him. Good on him, mad old bugger. Talking absolute shite.
Maro Bucker. Yeah, Taro Aso on Monday said that rice on the northernmost main island of Hokkaido has become tastier thanks to global warming. A remark likely to raise eyebrows of climate campaigners. I don't know why it's made it tastier, though. Maybe they can grow rice more of the year round.
I think you might be talking shit, mate. I think you might be an idiot. Making a point about something he knows little about. I think you know more about it than he does.
I'd love to just go in front of like the UN and just be like, to be honest, if you think about it, climate change is great. Better rice, isn't it? Tastier rice in Hokkaido. Yeah. It's worth all the damage.
When I'm watching the super bikes in the Japanese, I don't know, the motorsport arena of Yamazaki or whatever it's called, I can notice that the wheels on the bike, when they squeal around a corner and it makes a little bit of smoke, it's just a little bit more smoke. It makes it more exciting because it's warmer. See? Global warming, good thing.
That's the topics covered in today's podcast, from radioactive boar genocide to the global warming to rice. But I mean, the good thing is now that Hokkaido's rice is delicious, apparently, at least we know 20 foods to have it with, don't we?
Raw eggs and
a bit of pork. Keep the stories, beautiful, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week with the podcast, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have a great few days and we'll see you to do it all over again later in the week. Have a good one.
Pass the crab claw.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook?
And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.